Yeah. Welcome to another Dating Kinky presentation. Tonight we have Dr. Liz talking about maintaining relationships during social distancing, and I am super duper excited about this. Thrilled that she agreed to do this for you all, and I have peeked through the slides, and y'all are in for a treat. So, without any further ado, I hand you over to Sex Positive Psych.
Hi,
Take it
everybody.
away.
I am Dr. Liz. Before we dive into the slides, I just want to give those of you who may not know me already just a bit of an idea about who I am and why the fuck I'm the person talking to you about this topic. So I am a psychologist and an author and a speaker. The book that I wrote is called Building Open Relationships, and it's a book all about how to actually do non-monogamy rather than just think about or feel about it. It's got tons of worksheets and checklists. And one of the things that I've learned through being a psychologist and being a therapist is about how to find accommodations given what is available for folks. I think that a lot of the advice that we get in this world is very one size fits all. And a lot of us have different kinds of lives or different kinds of experiences than other folks do. In terms of my personal history, I'm a psychologist. I started in grad school way back in like 2006. And immediately out of grad school, I went into the army for 5 years where I served as a psychologist, including one tour in Afghanistan. I've been out as bisexual since I was 17. So I'm like, past my 20-year mark as a bi person. I've been out as a kinkster since I was about 21, and I've been doing non-monogamy on and off since high school. I'm also genderqueer, and I've been exploring my gender over the last few years. So when I talk about having had to do a lot of work on figuring out how to make things within this life work differently, it's because of a lot of those factors. I'm also disabled. I was released from the army due to disability, and I am someone who is very, very slutty, and so I end up with lovers and date mates kind of all over the world because my pussy knows no bounds when it comes to geographic boundaries. So the kind of things that I'm talking about today are in part, the same kind of advice that I would give, or the same kind of thoughts I would give about, in general, long distance relationships, because right now, not living with someone is a long distance relationship. Most of us all over the world are in various amounts of quarantine or lockdown or shelter in place orders or social distancing because the coronavirus is, it's a true pandemic. It is killing so many people and hospitalizing so many people. And so all of us are in this completely novel situation of figuring out how to still maintain some kind of connection when we can't actually physically get together with the people that we care about. I'm currently not dating a lot of people because I had a period last year where I just needed a lot of space to heal myself. But even with having my one partner, it's been a lot of work figuring out how to keep a life that is still worth living. And I think that that's a lot of what I want to focus on today is when we're getting through this pandemic, it is not enough for all of us to simply survive. We must also have lives that are worth living. We must find the things that bring richness to our lives that help us feel seen and cared for and connected, even if we can't have that the ways we normally would prefer to. So, with that being said, let's go ahead and dive on in. The first step for maintaining our relationships right now is to grieve. We are in the middle of a huge shared trauma. This is a trauma that is akin to being in a war-torn country. It's a trauma that is akin to having everyone that you care about being threatened with death all at once. And it's also a trauma where nothing about our normal lives is being allowed to continue. This is not normal, and we are not okay. And I think when we're talking about relationships, a lot of us want to talk about how to make the things good or find the like hot, sexy stuff to do together. And I'll talk about that plenty during this. But until we acknowledge where we are, until we acknowledge the realities of this challenging time, both to ourselves and to those that are close with us, we can't actually move forward or change anything. This is a hard time. You know, usually when I'm being Dr. Liz, I do like full makeup and I do my hair and I wear really cute clothes. And this morning as I was getting ready to start my day and see some clients, I realized that I just don't have that in me right now. That right now, what I can do is show up to this webinar and talk to all of you, but I'm not going to have the makeup. I'm not going to be as polished. I'm not going to be perfect. And that's okay, because none of us have to be that right now. The other advantage of sharing this grief with others is that it gives us a chance to hold this together rather than trying to hold it alone. Pain is much easier when we share it. Grieving is meant to be a process that we experience within community and in a space of love and connection. And if you're trying to hold all of your fears or worries or sadness into yourself and not share them with the people you're close with, you're going to create a distance in that relationship. Relationships are only so strong as the space that they have for the stuff that is hard. And that's not to say that like every single person that you occasionally fuck casually needs to hear you crying on the phone. It is to say that part of intimacy right now is sharing this pain. And we need to find the way to connect over these hard times and hold space for each other as we have available, rather than trying to pretend everything is okay or only find silver linings or focus on productivity or jump into a new fitness challenge. Like, there's so much talk online, especially among the influencer communities, of like all the ways you can maximize your COVID time. And from my perspective, the best thing you can do to maximize your COVID time is to take really great care of yourself and have a lot of space for the hardships that are happening for you right now. And when I'm talking about grieving here, I'm not even just talking about like people dying or getting sick or the ways that we can't see like our closest people. I'm also talking about grieving the things that aren't gonna happen that we were looking forward to during this time. I had 3 conferences I was supposed to be presenting at in April that I was really looking forward to. And one of them is canceled and 2 are postponed indefinitely. I was supposed to be in Europe for 3 weeks in March. And I flew out and had to buy an emergency plane ticket back within the first week because I didn't know if I'd still be able to re-enter this country for so long. This is a time where a lot of us are losing things that it seems weird to talk about grieving because it sounds like we're complaining about privilege. Oh, I was supposed to be in Europe for 3 weeks and I only got to be there for 6 days and like, ooh, poor me. But that is actually poor you. The things you were looking forward to, the things that were giving your life flair and excitement and fun and play, are worth grieving and worth giving space to. So grieve. Allow yourself the space to grieve. Allow yourself the space to anticipate and do anticipatory grieving for those that we may lose. I don't know about y'all, but my parents have had a difficult time taking this all seriously. And I had to have a conversation with them where I told them I would really be sad and it would really suck if you died during a time where I literally can't come to see you or be there for the funeral. And I need you to take this seriously because if you die when I can't even go there, I'm going to be wrecked about that. And I don't even have like a fantastic relationship with my parents. So allow yourself to grieve. Grieve what you have. Grieve what you don't have. Grieve what we've lost on all of the different levels and share that with each other. The next step is to prioritize. The best metaphor I've seen for this that isn't like a lot of you have probably heard the spoon theory. So the spoon theory is that people who have chronic illness or disabilities only have a certain number of spoons each day, and those are used up on different kinds of activities. The person who created spoon theory would prefer for that to be used only for folks with chronic illness or disabilities. And so I talk about it instead in terms of bandwidth. When you are in the middle of a trauma, the way that your body and your brain work are they focused very specifically on certain kinds of things. And that is, how do we keep you alive? And how do we remember what was making this dangerous so we avoid it next time? That means that the parts of our brains that are most active right now are our limbic system, which is the deep, deep, lizardy part of your brain that does feelings and emotions and angers. And the parts of our brain that do like forward thinking and planning and creativity are significantly impaired, the prefrontal cortex, right? When our limbic system is in high drive, when we are in a trauma, when we are facing significant stressors, our brains just don't work the way that they are. So acknowledge your limited bandwidth. And within that, acknowledge that your first step must be caring for yourself. There is a reason that on an airplane they tell you to put your own oxygen mask on first. It's because if you don't, you're gonna pass out before you can help someone else. We have to take care of ourselves. We have to be aggressive in the way that we care for ourselves. And for a lot of us, that doesn't come naturally. You know, for me, I grew up in a household where, you know, my mom is not really a particularly healthy person in terms of her psychological health. And that means that a lot of my childhood was about surviving her and figuring out how to like shelter in place and how to like not ask too much and not tip her over the edge. That means that now as an adult, I struggle to ask for what I want. I'm a part of a group here in Portland called the Perlene, which is a social club and workspace for ambitious women and, you know, non-binary folks who would feel called to a feminine space. And on the call today, I was talking about like how stressed I am being a therapist right now and how hard it is to carry all of the trauma and the fear that I'm carrying for myself and for others. And they asked me what I wanted, and it was so hard for me to even accept offers of help, because the lesson that I learned when I was younger was that it's my job to take care of other people and make other people okay, not that I need to take care of myself. However, once I moved into that space of allowing myself to make those asks, as hard and vulnerable as it was, they were happy to give me that help. So I have someone who's going to be bringing me food that's like healthy and nourishing food. I have someone who's going to be like just checking in with me and chatting with me to see what's going on. That's what I need to take care of myself. Right now, I have to focus on taking care of myself or I can't care for others. The other thing about this is that because our bandwidth is limited, we may not be able to maintain as many connections as we usually could. In a normal, like, day-to-day life, most humans can manage up to like 15 very close connections and then 30-ish kind of more distant connections. Right now, that number is probably going to be more limited. If you're a person who's non-monogamous and usually you can date or have like 4 or 5 play partners, this may be a time where your bandwidth makes it hard to maintain relationships or put in effort for more than 2 or 3. If you're someone who, like me, has a lot of friends, you know, I have a friend group, we have a group chat, there are 13 of us in it. And then I also have the Perlene, which has 100 some members, and that's like 120 people that I have to pay attention to just right there. And then we throw in my partner, their housemates, and the people who are my lovers who I keep in contact with semi-regularly, and I'm talking like 200 some odd people. And in a normal week, I might be able to keep some kind of rough contact with all those folks, but right now, I can only really focus on like my partner and that relationship, my close friends who are my squad, and then a couple of other folks. When you are thinking about prioritizing, it can be helpful to sit down and look at all of your connections and figure out like who are the closest into you, who are the most energizing, who are the most, the ones who feed you the most, the ones who you feel like you get the best interactions with, and who are the ones who are more energetically draining for you, who are the ones who are more challenging for you. And allow yourself to figure out within that priority list, who is worth your effort? Who do you want to dedicate that effort towards? This process for a lot of us can feel really scary and can bring up a lot of beliefs that we have about like obligations, like who do we owe our time to? If you don't love interacting with your family of origin, if that doesn't feed you, you have my permission to pull back and interact with them less right now. If there are people in your life who you tend to spend a lot of time with, but you find that they're like kind of an energy suck for you, you have my permission to pull back from them right now. You get to figure out who you want to spend your time and energy on. And there is no right or wrong answer there. There may be consequences for the choices that you make, but there's consequences for every choice. I talk with folks a lot. I was almost, fun facts about Dr. Liz, I was almost a religious studies major as a second major to psychology. And I specialized in Hinduism and Eastern religions. And karma as a concept, I think, is really misunderstood within our culture. Karma within Hinduism simply means the fruition of action, right? The things that we do have a consequence. That is a thing that follows from what we do. And so when I talk about consequences here, I don't mean bad things. I mean that there is an outcome associated with the decisions that we make. So with this, the outcomes of the decisions that we don't make are also going to impact us. If, for instance, you're someone who tends to have a lot of trouble setting boundaries and saying no to people, that is most likely going to drain you far quicker right now than it would otherwise. A person I follow on Twitter who's an ADHD Twitter person, Black Girl Lost Keys, her name is Renee, she talks about guard your yes with your life. Because the reality is we only get so many yeses. And every yes that we say is a no to other things. So sit down, be really honest with yourself, and figure out what are your priorities. How do you want to focus your energy right now? How do you want to focus your attention? The next step, make it easy. So I don't know if any of you, like me, like to make things complicated. I'm betting you do because you're kinky. And kinky is like, how do I make sex and playtime even more complicated for myself and for those around me? So in like fun ways, usually. Like usually this is a lot of like really fun, entertaining stuff to create all these extra systems and all these extra terminology and all these extra ways of doing things. But for right now, when our bandwidth is limited, we want to find ways to make things as easeful as we can. For me, I have ADHD, and one of the ways that that shows up for me is if I'm not directly interacting with you and I'm not seeing you, I can forget you exist. I'm like a cat. As soon as you're out the door, you're gone, unless I had wanted to see you, and then I will punish you horribly forever. It's mostly a joke. So if you're someone who tends to forget, find ways to make this easier for you. There are a lot of tools, especially in this day of technology, to have ways that to make this kind of thing easier. I use an app called Fabric, which is there in the slide. And Fabric lets you put in different contacts that you have and set how often you want to be contacting them, and then it will remind you to do it. It'll give you a notification saying, hey, have you checked in with this person yet? And for me, having those little nudges helps me remember to talk to the people I care about that I want to be talking to. I do want to have these relationships with these people. I want to put in the energy. I want to put in the time. I just forget because I get overwhelmed with other things. Some people really like using reminders or calendar events. That's a really great system for a lot of folks. Some people like systems or routines, like every Tuesday is my friend day, or every Wednesday I talk to this person. Whatever it is that's going to work for you to create more ease here, lean into that. Find ways to make this as easeful as you can. What other apps do I recommend? So as of right now, the ones that I know that are free and easy and accessible would be like Google Calendar. Fabric is a good one. Some people really enjoy apps like, what is it called? There's an excellent app that basically gamifies habits. So it's called Habitica. And it's like an RPG. So you have a character who you're leveling up, and you can put in whatever habits you want on whatever frequency you want them to be, and you get points for going in and doing those habits. So you could set contacting different people at different frequencies as your habits within Habitica. Yeah, that's the correct spelling for Habitica. And there's also like Habitbull is another app that'll remind you to do things. There's a lot of different ways that you can do this. You can even just search like productivity apps or tracking apps. Even apps that are more commonly used for project management could work. Stuff like Trello or Asana could be really helpful in this time as well. Next step is to personalize it. So the Five Love Languages book in and of itself is a little Christian for my taste, but has a lot of good information about how each of us speaks and hears love, and that the ways that we speak or hear might be different than the ways that our partner speaks or hears. For me, my number one love language is touch. So if I don't get touch of some kind, I will lose it. Some people, their number one language is gifts. That is my worst love language. I feel a lot of anxiety around gift giving because I want it to be perfect and nothing is perfect enough. So I have a lot of challenge around gift giving. What we need to do in this time, especially, is figure out how to speak love in a way that our partners can hear it. So if the people who are close to you haven't taken that quiz yet, it's a free quiz online. You can take it and get a lot of good information about how to better show up for each other. I think it's also helpful right now to talk about what each of us wants and needs and to help figure out how to make that work. Some things to keep in mind with that are like what aspects of your interactions are the most nourishing for each of you, and like how do we balance heavy stuff that's important to talk about, that grief, that sharing of this pain, with like playful and fun stuff. It's really easy to get stuck into ruts of like only doing heavy things or only doing playful things. And so it's important to figure out for you all what your balance is going to look like and to be very mindful of that. One of the biggest things I do with my clients who come in for couples work is figure out like for them, like what proportion of your time are you processing this relationship and dealing with problems? And what proportion are you actually like having fun and enjoying each other? Because if the majority of your relationship is processing the relationship, like that is not going to work in the long term. You need to have time that you're just being with each other, just having fun, just enjoying each other and building that connection. Without that, it's really, really hard to keep these things going. So you want to make sure that with this, you know what that balance looks like for you. For me, right now, because it's literally my job to hold the coronavirus fears for all of my clients, the amount of heavy space that I have in my relationship is less than it might otherwise be. For me, as a person who dates and does kink and has relationships and has like sex with people, it is hard for me to find a way to make sure that I have enough space to like have the relationship with someone without it going across the line into a space where it's beyond the like capability that I have to effectively be present to it. And so a lot of my relationships are about continually checking in with myself and with the other person about, do I feel like I'm working? Do I feel like I'm overloaded? Am I feeling exhausted or am I feeling energized here? And if I'm feeling too much to that exhausted, overloaded kind of range, figuring out how to help course correct. And play is the best way to course correct when you're feeling overwhelmed or burnt out or exhausted. Play is essential for all humans. That's one thing that kinksters get that a lot of people don't. Kink is a beautiful way that we've found to create adult playtime. Time that is about exploration and experimentation and freedom and trying out new things without pressure. And so find ways to bring that play in and to make sure that play is a big part of what's happening for you. And the thing here is that a lot of times when we're feeling overwhelmed, it can be really hard to think about playing, even when that's what we need the most. So figure out how with your people that you care about, you can encourage each other into play, even when you're feeling like you don't have the space for it. Because finding that space for play is going to be essential for us getting through it. Next one, use technology. if you can't physically get together with your people, find ways that we can have deeper interactions, even when we're far away. Marco Polo is one of my favorite apps for this. Marco Polo is like a video messenger app. So instead of sending each other text messages, you send little videos. And it's really, really easy, and it's asynchronous, so there's not a pressure of like having to be on at the same time. So you get to just record your video, send it off to the person, they get to it when they get to it. It's got like filters you can use, it's got fun voice effects, you can put on text, you can put in pictures. There's a lot of different ways that you can share it, but my experience has been that it's a much richer way of maintaining distanced connections than just text messages or phone calls or occasional video chats. My friend group, we have a group Marco Polo thread. And so every day I get to see the faces and hear the voices of these people that I really care about, even if I haven't seen them in person in a year. And it helps me remain connected to them and continue feeling that connection. Marco Polo is also great for dirty stuff, because if you're feeling really hot and sexy, but your partner is working, you can send them a video of you jerking off or talking about what you want to do to them, and then they can go and access it once they have the space to actually access that message. Phone and video sex are also great options right now. I love video sex. I think it's a lot of fun. If you haven't ever done it before, just accept that it's going to be awkward the first few times. If you're fancy like me, you might have like a tripod that you can like put your phone or your camera on, so it's a little bit easier in terms of like not having enough hands or being too complicated. But you can always find stuff to brace stuff on. You can get pretty cheap tripods for cell phones on Amazon. There are always ways to help up that game without spending too much money. And video sex can be a great way to have those live interactions with each other. Kink is great for distance, especially if you're into psychological kink. I'm a huge humiliation degradation fan. I love doing that play on both sides of the coin. And it's so easy to do that over distance. I can send a whole text message to someone about all of the terrible, like, such a filthy little slut. I can't believe that you'd send me that picture of your butthole. What were you thinking? Did you think I'd want to see that? What's wrong with you? Do you send this to just everybody? Did you send this to 30 different people? Or was it actually just for me? It's so easy to create those kinds of scenes over distance. Truth or Dare, which someone just brought up in the chat, is great. There's also, if you are a humiliation or degradation person, Princess Callie has a great deck that's Truth or Dare for humiliation. And you can have each have a copy of the deck, and the bottom gets to pull a card, and the top gets to pull a card, and you can send that back and forth either live in real time or over something like Marco Polo. Netflix Party is also great. I've been loving that because it allows you to have multiple people watch the same thing on Netflix at the same time. I'm seeing House Party is another video hangout app. I haven't tried that one yet, so I'll have to look into that. Princess Callie's card game, I'm sure one of the folks is looking up the link to that right now. If you can't find it, let me know and I'll find it for you. The other thing that I'd recommend here is not necessarily technology related, but all about deepening interactions, is sending each other meaningful items. I was in a long distance relationship for a while before I moved up to Portland, and the person I was with would send me t-shirts that he had worn that smelled like him. And I would wrap that t-shirt around a pillow so that when I went to bed, it was like I was cuddling with him. Another partner of mine, who was my daddy, gave me a stuffed bear that was Daddy Bear, so that when he was away and I couldn't see him, I had Daddy Bear to cuddle instead. And you know, it helps that in some ways I'm a little, it also is a thing that we can all do for each other. What are things that you can have around that help you feel connected to your partner? Is it about images? Is it about items? Like, what are the things that you can do to have these meaningful interactions with each other? Maybe if it's about kink stuff, it's your dirty panties. Or maybe it's you get mailed the toy that your partner most likes to use on you, and you then video chat and use it on yourself. Maybe you send each other gifts of sex toys. There's all kinds of different ways to make this work, but meaningful items are a huge part of creating that connection and maintaining it when you're far away. I think, you know, a lot of us especially, those of us who have trouble with asking for things may feel nervousness about saying, "Hey, I really like you. Can you send me something that smells like you?" And the thing is, we all have to ask for more. And I think that this plays into my next slide. During this time where we are separated and really, really stressed, we have to over-communicate. I'm a fan of over-communicating in general all the time, but especially right now, we have to talk more. If you're stressed out, more things are going to irritate you, more things are going to rub you wrong, you're going to have more wants and needs, it's going to be more complex for you. So take the chance to over-communicate. Give yourself the space to be really upfront about where you're at, what's working for you, and what isn't. If something isn't working, talk about it early, talk about it often. I've had so many relationships where a partner came to me and said, "The last several months I've been really upset about this thing." And they said that they didn't bring it up because they didn't want to make me upset or they felt they could get over it. And I hear that, but we have to find the strength and the bravery to talk about the things that aren't working, even if it's scary, even if it's hard. It is always better for your partner to know what you want and need than for them to try to guess. Because, I'm so sorry, most of us are terrible mind readers. We're just really bad at it. I'm a psychologist. It is my job to figure out what's going on in people's heads, and I am a shit mind reader. Maybe you're lucky and you're better than I am, but for the most part, when we're trying to read someone's mind, what we're filling in is what we think and believe, not what they think and believe. So, talk about it more. Ask for more. The habit that I used to have that I'm working hard at unlearning was I wouldn't ask for things because I felt like that would be too overwhelming and I would be a burden to people and they would think that I was too much. So I just wouldn't ask for stuff unless it was like an absolute, I have to have this kind of thing. The problem is, if we only ask for necessities, there's no room for our partner to tell us no. We have to give our partners space to have their own capacity issues, to be able to say no to things. And the only way that our partner has space to say no is if we're asking for a lot. The best metaphor explaining this that I've ever seen was in an article about men and desire. And it was talking about the way that a lot of men, especially in the era of Me Too, were feeling like they had all this desire and they didn't know what to do about it. And the premise of the article was that the best way to deal with having a lot of desire is to always be wanting a whole lot of things, because then you're always going to be getting some things that you want and always going to not be getting some things that you want. When we attach ourselves to just one thing or just one way of solving a problem or just one way of feeling seen or heard, it makes it much harder for our partners to actually be able to give that to us. The more of a buffet that we can lay out for each other of things that work, the easier it's going to be for others to give them to us. Have you ever had a friend or a partner who only wants to eat one thing? It's annoying as shit because if you want Indian that day and they will only eat pizza, you can't go get Indian together. So ask for more, be open to more. Treat the issues that are coming up with you and your partner about these kinds of troubles as opportunities for creative problem solving. The problems in relationships are not about me versus you. They're about us versus the problem. So how do we sit down next to each other, look at what the problem is, and figure out creative solutions together? Rather than it being about how do I force you to give me what I need? How do I force you to give me what I need? And trying to struggle against each other. The counterpoint of this is that we have to be real with each other about our boundaries and capacity. There are some folks who I would love to be dating right now. I can't. I just can't. I have my partner. Luckily, we get to see each other in person. But the idea of trying to create a relationship or nurture a romantic relationship with someone else right now sounds exhausting. I don't have the bandwidth. And there are times where my partner wants something from me, and I just don't have the bandwidth. And it can even be small and simple things. Like the other day we were in the car driving to the grocery store, and I asked what music they wanted to listen to, and they brought up a couple of bands who I didn't know, and I just felt this like pit of my stomach sinking. And so I turned to them and I said, like, look, I don't think I have it in me for new music today. So I'm going to put on a playlist of things that I like. I love you so much. I will listen to this music you want to introduce me to another time. But I can't do that today. Right? Maybe it's, I can't cook today. So either we need to order in takeout, or you need to cook, or we need to like eat whatever snacks we have around. Maybe it's, all I have the space for right now is putting on something I've seen a million times before so that I can just kind of like zone out while it's on. Be real. Be super real about what your boundaries and capacity are. Don't be afraid to say no, because you have to. You really, really have to. And the thing about boundaries is that boundaries are a way that we care for ourselves and our partners. You know, Reid Mihalko, who is a friend of mine, when he does play parties or cuddle parties, during the introduction, talks about the importance of no. And the way that he frames it is, how many of you have ever been out with someone who said yes to something, but you could tell that they were actually a no? Most of us have had that experience. The second question after that is, did that enhance the experience for you? When someone is a no, and they actually tell us that no, they are giving us the gift of the freedom to find the no somewhere else, to find that person who wants to be doing this thing with us. Your no is a way that you take care of yourself. It's also a way that you make sure that you're not hooking your partner into a situation where they're not actually getting what they want. The yeses that we say that we don't mean, that we're doing out of obligation or fear or uncertainty, they don't help us. They don't help us, and they don't help our partners either. So be real about your boundaries and capacity. Okay, yeah. So the last thing I'll say here is, it's okay if you're struggling. And you don't have to struggle alone. Right now, all of us are struggling. All of us. The only people I've talked to who aren't struggling, at least at some times and in some ways, are people who have chronic anxiety. Because for them, now, all the things that they are always worried about that everyone is not worried about are the things that everyone is worried about. So all of a sudden, the outside world matches the inside of their brain, and that's a relief to them. Some of us who have trauma histories are finding this really easy because we're used to trauma. And some of us who have trauma histories are finding it really hard because we're already overloaded. It is okay to be struggling right now. You don't have to come out of the COVID period with the hottest body you've ever had. You're already in the hottest body you've ever had. The body you have tomorrow and a month from now is the hottest body you've ever had. You're gorgeous exactly the way that you are. You don't need to do 3,000 push-ups to make that true. You don't have to write a novel while you're stuck in the house with coronavirus stuff. If you want to, awesome. And if you don't have that in you, that's fine too. If your biggest accomplishment is just getting through this and surviving, if your biggest accomplishment is watching all of the Netflix you've ever wanted to watch, that is great. That in and of itself is plenty. You don't have to do more. It is okay to struggle. It is okay to not be productive. It is okay to let go of this capitalist lie that your productivity is your worth. Your worth is inherent to you as a person. You as a person, whoever you are already worthy of love and belonging exactly the way that you are. Who you are is worthy, no matter how hard you're struggling. No matter how hard this is for you, you are still worthy. And you don't have to struggle alone. Find people to share with. Find people to talk to about this. Find people who can see you in the fullness of your experience and help you and hold you there. I am amazingly lucky that before this started, I got into my friend group and I got into the Pearline. because those are communities where everything about who I am is welcome. You know, earlier today, I was crying a lot. I was crying so much because it's overwhelming right now being in this situation. So the Perlene, I'll write this here. Perlene. Being a therapist right now is about holding the coronavirus fears of 20-ish people who are my clients, plus my own, plus my friends, plus my partner. And that's a lot. There's also the stress of, right now, the only reason that I have in-person face-to-face interactions with other people is because my partner has housemates. And if my partner and I were to break up, I would lose all of my interactions with other people. And I'm super extroverted, so that would be horrifying. And that means that, like, every conflict that I have with my partner has this huge weight to it in an all new way. It is hard right now. Lots of people are losing their jobs. I'm immensely privileged that the job that I do is one that I can do virtually, that I've been doing video chat sessions with people for years, so I know how to do that. But a lot of people are worried about losing their homes. They're worried about having enough to eat. They're worried about when they're going to see their partners again or their families. They're worried about whether they're going to even be able to attend the funerals of the people that they know who die. Those are huge things for all of us to be carrying. And so it's okay if you're struggling. It's okay if this is hard. You don't need to put a happy spin on it if that's not what you want to do. Find the people who can hold the wholeness of your experience and the wholeness of who you are. And then you can start finding ways to move through it. The thing about grief is that until you grieve, you can't move forward. Feelings are, they're like energy, right? Energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Once the feeling is there, it's not going to go away because we don't pay attention to it. If we shove it tightly into a box and tuck that box in a corner, that doesn't make the feeling go away. It just gives it a space to fester and to grow. So allow yourself the space to feel these feelings now. Allowing yourself to feel these feelings is essential. And allow yourself to find the time that you need to move out of them. You can decide that you want to just not feel your feelings for a while, right? You can decide that tonight is a night that you just want to drink a couple drinks and watch some Netflix and pretend the world isn't on fire, right? You can decide to play 5 hours of Mario Party because that'll help you forget. You just want to be sure that you're giving yourself space for these feelings. I see in the chat, feelings are bad right now. I don't think that there are bad feelings. I think that there are feelings that are more challenging for us and feelings that are easier for us. Challenging feelings are really important because there's nothing beautiful or deep or meaningful in this life that comes without the risk of hard feelings. There is no relationship that doesn't end. I like to tell the story that, you know, I've had the monogamy perfect relationship. I've lived the fairy tale relationship. I met this amazing person. We started dating. Nothing was wrong. We had no fights. Things were beautiful. We were falling deeply for each other. And then he died. Monogamy perfect, right? Like, that's what it's supposed to be. A great relationship. You love each other deeply. Ends in death. If I had decided after the death of my partner to never date again, I would have missed out so much on so many beautiful things. We are all going to, through the course of this, have a lot of challenging feelings that come up for us. Those challenging feelings are an opportunity for us to deepen our relationships with those around us and with ourselves. Challenging feelings are wake-up calls. They are opportunities and doors into depth and into connection and into joy. Because there isn't joy in a world where we never take risks of things feeling badly for us. If we aren't risking the challenging feelings, we're not going to experience the beautiful ones either. So let yourself struggle. It's okay. And you don't have to be alone in it. So that is most of what I have at this point. So with awesome. That, I can transition into questions and comments that folks have.
Let's real quick, we will, okay, everybody, before we head into questions, I've been gathering the questions throughout the show so far. So if you've asked a question, I've probably got it. I would like to first, because I know a lot of people sort of plan for 1 hour. So first, everybody who was only able to plan for 1 hour, thank you for joining us. It was wonderful to have you. Make sure that you get the opportunity to follow Dr. Liz, check out what she's doing, check out her book. If her book is even 1/10 as good as this class, it is absolutely amazing. You know, give her a big hand.
If you're nervous about books and buying books, all of the worksheets from my book are available for free online. So I'll type right now in the chat the link where you can find all of those.
Awesome. And make sure that you bombard Dr. Liz via email and all of her social media, telling her that you want her back on. especially for our It's Not Cheating, It's Ethical Non-Monogamy 2-day event.
Oh, I'm so there.
It sounds like she would be super awesome for that.
Yeah. I'm so into talking ethical non-monogamy.
Yay. Yeah, we're super excited about that one. Also, just as an aside to all of you, you know, this is something that we do here at Dating Kinky. We make this free to everyone who can join us live. We have, hold on, I'm actually going to pop something up here just to, there we go. I'll take that down in a minute. So this one that we're doing right here, the replay is actually going to be going up and it's going to be available to the general public because this is related to the coronavirus, COVID-19, and we're making all of the things that we're doing related to that available to the public. So the replays will be up there. You can share these with anybody. Just watch for the link to get up on the site or shoot me a note if you're wondering where it is. Make sure that anybody you know who might be struggling gets a chance to listen to this. We put it up in both video and in audio format so they can listen to it like a podcast. So super awesome there. Yes, the recording does include the chat text. We actually put that up as a download. The Plus membership allows you to get access to all of our replays, including, like, for example, International Kinky Women's Day, where we did 9 webinars in 1 day for 14 and a half hours. And that was fun. And it was all about empowering and lifting women in kink. So our Plus membership is access to that library of webinars, to the book that I write every month, to any online classes that I create. It's also some benefits and features on the dating side of our app. And it's a monthly price, normally $20. Ryan, I think he's paying attention, is going to put all of the information into the chat to make sure that you have access to a coupon that'll give it to you for $5 per month. So take advantage of that. I'm not sure how long my CFO is going to let me get away with this. I mentioned I was just going to, like, you know, give it to a few people. So $5 per month, that is in perpetuity. That means forever. So once you get it at $5 a month, as long as you have a membership, you keep it at $5 a month. So that means a new book every month, webinar replays, even when you can't make them, you know, all these wonderful, awesome things. Plus, you're supporting me and eventually will be able to pay people like Dr. Liz to come back regularly, right? Wouldn't that be awesome? Like the monthly Dr. Liz show. So yeah,
that idea.
Yeah, let's do this thing. So no Storm, there's no Nookie video right now. I usually only do that at the beginning when I'm like saying hi to everybody. Okay, so Plus membership, please do check that out. And we'll put that up at the very end as well to make sure that you have it when you're ready to leave. And now I am going to go back to Dr. Liz's slide, and I'm going to start asking some questions. So first question, I believe, was from Hi There Catsuit. During this crisis, it seems like a lot of my friends have gone into isolation, not only in person because they have to, but also online and in chats. What is the best advice you have for being able to feel connected when so many others are silent? This is not a criticism, simply an observation.
Yeah, so people react to trauma and stress in different ways. So some people, when they're feeling trauma and stress, reach out a lot, and some people shut down and fold it. The other thing that I would say about this is that right now, because there isn't in-person interaction, a lot of people are getting significantly more messages or digital notifications than they usually would. And for some folks, that's overwhelming. So like right now, I don't even want to know how many notifications I have on my phone, because like, it's probably a ton. And I spent 3 hours today getting through my message backlog already. In an average day, between just like Facebook messages, text messages, and Marco Polos, it's not uncommon for me to receive 300 to 400 messages. If we add in emails, it's huge. So the thing that I would say is, if you're noticing that folks have withdrawn from those digital spaces or are having trouble responding, find a way that you can continue to reach out to them and attempt to talk to them that doesn't feel to you like it's building resentment. So can you give those messages and check-ins in the spirit of giving as a gift rather than expecting in return? If there are people who you really need to hear back from, can you get them to have a conversation with you about like what their bandwidth is and what kinds of return you need? Like for instance, one of my good friends who's a former partner of mine, we had a period where I was having trouble responding to messages, and so he pulled back from messaging me as much. And I recently told him, like, I really miss when you message me a lot. I know that I'm struggling to message you back in the same kind of time frame that you message me, but it actually really helps me a lot to just get those messages from you, because then I can, like, respond to stuff. There also might be things that people have an easier time, like, reading or responding to. Memes tend to be great. Cute cat videos tend to be great. Like, ask the person what kinds of messages they have an easier time receiving so that you can make sure that you're sending them things that are easier for them to engage with. Part of making it easy is about making it easy for both of you. And so if what they have the bandwidth to receive right now is like cute cat videos, or maybe it's Tiger King memes or whatever it is, find ways that you can reach out with those things that are easy for them and that feel nourishing for them. And again, like, expect that some folks are just going to answer less now. It's a tough time. Within a month, people might be back to a different kind of rhythm on messaging back. But for the first month or two that these restrictions are in place, people are just dealing with, like, what the fuck is my life and how do I do this? And so try to find grace for yourself. Try to find grace for them. Try to find a space of being able to gift your contact rather than having expectations about return.
I think that's a great point. And especially the point you made about how people are getting so many more messages right now. You know, I have people that I might be used to talking to once a day, and now they're reaching out 4 or 5 times a day, trying to make that connection, which I understand. For me, who tends to introvert when I get stressed, and plus this for me has made me even busier, that makes it even harder. So You've made some really good points there. Next question. My partner has depression and for the past few weeks has not been communicating. How can I help her as I need her to communicate with me? She's gotten better, but I'm wondering from a therapist's point of view, what advice you might share.
So the biggest recommendation I could give here is find ways that you can talk about what you want or need from them that are less likely to make them feel judged or like they've done something wrong. Because a lot of people who have depression, their brain's kind of default script is nobody likes me, nobody wants me around, I'm always messing things up, I'm doing things wrong. So find if there's a way to share with them what it is that you want more of in terms of communication that doesn't make them feel like they're a fuck up. Also figure out if there are easier ways for them to communicate, right? Is it easier for them to communicate if they like write a note on a post-it and then leave it somewhere for you? Is it easier for them to communicate if they can do it through an email or by just like sending you a voice memo? Like, what are the easiest ways for them to communicate these things with you so that you're decreasing the barriers that they have? I hate phone calls. I just fucking hate being called on the phone and talking to people on the phone. And so if someone needs to talk with me on the phone, that is so much higher energy cost for me than if someone just needs like a quick text message. So like find out like what are the easy ways for them to communicate and maybe come up with more code words. You know, we are all used to having safe words. Find other code words. There have been folks in my life where when we get into certain patterns, we have a code word that we use that's like our safe word for that. So like with my current partner, when we both feel like the other person isn't hearing us and we're just like talking past each other, our code word, so we got high on marijuana one night, it's legal in Oregon, and we were laughing about things and we were talking about saying celebrity names in funny ways, and Selena Gomez, we started saying as Selena Gummies. And there's no joke there. It's just really funny to us. So when we feel like we're missing each other, we try to remember for one of us to say, Selena Gummies, so that we can like laugh and find our way to break out of it. I've had folks with whom we had like an emoji that we sent each other as a version of a safe word. So like a partner who I had broken up with, but we were trying to maintain a friendship. If stuff got too sexually charged, we would send each other the dolphin emoji. Because I don't know if you know this about adolescent male dolphins, but they are rapey fucks. So that was the way that we coded to each other that we need the other person to tone it down some. So just find out like for them, what are easy ways to communicate and reduce as many of those barriers as possible. You can also see if they're receptive to asking questions about things. Asking questions like, hey, I've noticed that it seems like the last few days you've been struggling with X. I would love to support you with that if you're open to that. Do you have ideas about support that would be helpful? I can also offer ideas about support that might be helpful to you if it's easier to hear some things to choose from first. So like find ways to make it as easy as possible. There's also, in my book, there's a worksheet called the Tough Conversations Worksheet that can be really helpful if you're trying to figure out how to communicate something with someone that has you go through the steps of figuring out what the feelings are that are coming up for you, and then figuring out like what's the story you're telling about what's happened, what's the kindest story that you could tell about this situation, what is it that you want or need here moving forward, and like what's the easiest way for your partner to hear it. And that's just in general a great formula for any of these conversations.
I like what you mentioned there, you know, with your Selena gummies. And your rapey little dolphins. Because one of the things, and I'm sure that you know the term, one of the things that I really like to talk about when it comes to communication, especially in difficult conversations, is the idea of having the pattern interrupt, mm-hmm. right? Being able to break out of whatever, you know, cycle that you're in of raising your voice and speaking more slowly so that they finally fucking understand back and forth, right?
So yeah, the pattern interrupt for everyone. Somebody said, I was actively looking for a monogamous kink relationship. Now with this virus, I'm meeting more men online, but how do I get through the men who are just virus friendly and maybe acknowledge I'm possibly doing the same thing? I don't want to use people.
Yeah. So I have this term that I use with my friends, which is the ghosts of fuckboys past, which is when that person that you dated and shit went really poorly all of a sudden slides into your text messages to be like, hey, how's it going? Right? So the ghosts of fuckboys past is like very strong right now for everyone I know. Because we're all feeling lonely. And so you're scrolling through your phone and figuring out which people to text. What I would say, because you want monogamy eventually, that does not mean that right now you have to narrow down to one person. And part of this phase might be about exploration of what it looks like to build relationships with different kinds of folks to see like what kinds of folks are a good fit for you. If you know that eventually what you want is monogamy, I would be upfront with folks about that and let them know like that that's going to be your eventual goal. And trying to find a new monogamous relationship right now seems like a terrible freaking idea. It's like back to the days of like arranged marriages to the stranger who your parents are setting you up with. So like, give yourself space. I don't think that it's using people to have conversations with multiple folks, even if your eventual end goal is monogamy, because that's like saying if you test drive 5 cars, you're just being unfair to the cars. If you're being upfront with people, you're being honest about what your intentions are, you're being honest about who you are and what you want, and you're not lying to them about what's available, just be real, just be open, be honest, see how things go with different folks. There's no need to cut things off with anyone if you're not at a stage of feeling like this is definitely the person you only want to be monogamous with. So just give yourself spaciousness. And you can even, if you're worried about it, check in with them and say like, hey, look, I know that eventually I want monogamy. I know that I'm talking with a bunch of people right now. How is that for you? Like, what's coming up for you around that? Do you have any concerns about this? Is this making you feel uncomfortable? If you're being clear and upfront in your communication, then give them the opportunity to opt in. They get to say yes to that. That's fair.
Absolutely. And I might mention that if you're a Plus member, check out Dating Kinky, the book. There's a lot of like work that can go into that book as far as like, you know, getting your priorities straight, looking for values and so on and so forth. Because as you said, you don't want to use anybody. So you might just really, if you spend a little time, realize that, you know, yeah, you're talking to this person because you're bored, not necessarily because you think it's going to go anywhere. And that I'm not saying that's wrong. I do things like that all of the time. But at the same time, you need to know your intentions so that you can make the decisions that go along with your ethical perspective. Another question, what advice do you have? Oh, by the way, so it's 10 after. That means we're going to cut off additional questions at this point. I'm going to get through the questions that we have. So what advice do you have for those of us who live alone when touch is our number one love language?
So the biggest things I would say are find the things that help fit, like fill a touch need for you. And that's going to be very different for every person. For me, things that help fill a touch need, I have, when I sleep alone, I have a body pillow and 2 stuffies that I sleep with. So I have a lot of cuddles, like so many cuddles every night. I also have really, really soft sheets and a mattress that I fucking love and pillows that are fantastic for me. And part of that is about my disability and taking good care of my body. But another big part of that is that I need to have stuff that feels viscerally really good to me in order to get some of that touch need met. Some people love weighted blankets. I tried a weighted blanket. It didn't quite work for me. Some people find that like certain textures are really helpful for them. So like those really soft, like Sherpa style blankets, some people love. Some people love silky things or satiny things. Some people like, there are stuffed animals you can buy these days that you can throw in the microwave and heat up. So it's like a warm cuddle. Some people like to wrap themselves up tight in something. Some people like to just kind of like roll around on the floor, and that helps fit a touch need. What I would say is, if you don't know yet what fills that need for you, just experiment a ton around your place. Try interacting with different surfaces and areas in your house in new ways and see what feels really good for you. I recently got myself this new carpet for my living room that is a shag carpet. And like, it just feels so good under my feet that sometimes I'll just be sitting around and just like rub my feet on the carpet because it feels so good. So Tiger Lily, one of the two stuffies I sleep with is a Squishmallow unicorn, because I'm a unicorn.
I have a mermaid.
And I love it so much. It was my Christmas present from my best friend. So, you know, that's one of those things. I also really like taking baths for touch need, because the weight of the water is helpful and it's warm, and I can put in like stuff that smells really nice and like do a full exfoliation on my body. But find ways to just like give yourself a lot of touch. For a couple of years, I took classes through S Factor, which is like pole dance and erotic dance. And a lot of what they teach you in that movement is about touching your own body the way that you would want to be touched. And most of us don't touch our own body with the same kind of love and intention and desire and sensuousness that we would touch someone else's body. So explore touching yourself, finding ways to touch yourself and enjoy yourself. The other thing I would say is find ways to like more actively use your body, because when we use our big muscle groups, it helps clear out a lot of that fight or flight system response. So stuff like squats, burpees, push-ups, sprints, those are all really, really helpful to get your body kind of readjusted, which makes it easier to receive different kinds of touches pleasurable, and also makes it easier for us to get our needs met because we aren't at like such a high threshold all the time.
I find that interesting. I'm doing less jogging now than I've done, like long distance sort of jogging, and more high intensity interval training, which it makes sense. It after that, I don't have room for any stress in my body.
yeah. And just like the thing about that is just being aware of balancing stress and recovery, right? We're all under a ton of stress. Doing those kinds of high intensity exercises is helpful and is another kind of stress. So making sure that you're getting enough relaxation, meditation, sleep to help recover.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sleep, I'm one of those people. I think sleep is entirely underrated by nearly the entire world.
Oh my God. So me too.
I haven't used an alarm clock for over two decades.
Yeah.
I'm privileged enough to have set my schedule to allow that, but unless I'm getting up for like a really early morning flight, nope. I wake up naturally.
When I found it for me, like I found out I have sleep apnea, and like getting a CPAP machine has been huge for making me feel so much more rested, and so much more resourced emotionally and physically. Because I always was one of those people, I was like, 9.5 hours is great. 8 is the minimum. If I get less than that, I am not going to be a human. So it's been good to have like ways to increase that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you help someone keep their sense of purpose during this hard time?
Let me see if I can find it. There's a really fantastic article that came out about the different roles that people play during these kinds of crisis. So, okay, I found it. I'll put it in the chat. And it's about mapping our social change roles in times of crisis. Purpose is a really interesting thing to think about and talk about, because a lot of us think of purpose as related to productivity or work. But purpose, I think, is often much deeper than that. And so I think giving ourselves space to explore what purpose means for us, and also giving people space to feel like they don't know what their purpose is yet. If someone is feeling lost about what their purpose is, can you hold space for them while they explore that? Can you be the person who helps them hold space and be present to the challenge of feeling purposeless and to explore, like, what does give them meaning? When do they feel as though they are acting in alignment, when they are feeling that they're on the path? Those are all very deep sensations that are hard to describe or to give to someone else. And the other aspect of that would be reminding them of things that have been purpose for them in the past, right? If your purpose was your work, I doubt that it was explicitly about the exact work that you were doing and more about how that work plays into other aspects of this world and of life. A big part of my purpose, for me personally, is the work that I do. But it's not about just like doing client sessions or writing posts or recording videos. The purpose is about challenging people to take a chance on a life that is exactly what they want it to be. It's about challenging people's perceptions of what love or sex or dating should be. It's about challenging people's perceptions about what a queerdo with blue hair is or is capable of. My purpose is about rewriting our cultural scripts about sex and dating and love. And I can do that through individual sessions. I can do that through conversations I have with people. I can do that through just living my glorious, kinky, slutty life. So when we're talking about purpose, figure out, like, are we just looking at the surface elements of it that are manifestations of that purpose? And if we are, like, how do we distill down what that core is, so that we can find other ways to live it while the world is totally different?
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's pretty important. And also, something that I think that might help is if you know the words that they have used to discuss their purpose in the past, using those words when you're speaking to them can matter, because you know, how we use language affects, you know, how we think about and connect to our ideas. So, how would you play Truth or Dare without being physically close?
Depending on when I was doing it, what my schedule was like, what the other person's schedule was like, I would either do it on video chat or on Marco Polo, for me personally. If it's the kind of thing where we're okay with it being a game that kind of is ongoing over a long period of time, I would like do it on Marco Polo. And so either both of us get the prompt cards, so we have separate decks, or we designate one person as like the card puller, and that person pulls a card for themselves and shows it on the video and then does it, and then pulls a card for the other person and shows it to them, and that person sends a video of them doing it. I would be surprised if there aren't some kind of tools for Truth or Dare already online, some kind of like online multiplayer Truth or Dare. I'm sure exists, because we've already talked about it. So at the least there's porn about it. but I think video chat, Marco Polo are great ways to do it. If you don't like videos or you don't like that, you could always do it over text messages and send like pictures that would indicate that you've done things.
Okay, so this is talking about, you had mentioned your roommate and all of the people that, you know, sort of gather around as a result of that relationship, and how you might lose, you know, that particular community were you to lose that relationship. And somebody asked, how does one rebuild community after that kind of social implosion due to alienation of one or two people?
So this is a huge complex question that I think at its heart goes to the ways that like the carceral mindset informs the ways that we interact with each other, that there is this inherent way that a lot of our culture treats people as disposable if they've done certain things we don't approve of. And so we excise and exile them, and then live forever in fear of exile and excisement ourselves. I have done a lot of reading and research about like restorative justice and social and transformative justice approaches. And I think that the cornerstone of those is that no one is disposable and that healing happens in community. So depending upon how like a breakup happens or how like these changes happen, from my perspective, my goal is always to maintain as many interconnections as possible, even when things are changing. I'm very close friends with many of my former partners, even some with whom I had really challenging breakups, because we both, from the start, came to it from a place of maintaining those connections and being willing to do the work as one of our like cornerstones and foundations of how we do things. I'm very lucky in that a lot of the communities I'm involved in right now share those cornerstone values, that the goal is to find a way through and to help each other through conflict rather than to just cut people off or let them go. Right now with coronavirus, especially if there's a shelter in place order or a stay at home order, and you're not going to be cohabitating with someone or spending a lot of time at their place, that's more challenging. And so in general, I recommend that folks try to, as much as possible, diversify the connections that they have so that there isn't like just one like keystone person who, if that relationship was pulled, they would lose everything. That's challenging right now. You know, the realities of the world that we're in right now are that sometimes those small changes or those small rifts in relationships could create very big issues. So with rebuilding those communities, if that's a community that you want to stay connected to, even if there's a breakup, work at developing connections with those folks that aren't just about the relationship you have with the person that they are connected to. So like with my partner's housemates, if I was starting to worry about whether the relationship itself was sustainable, but wanted to have the option of maintaining a relationship with those housemates, it would be about putting more dedicated energy into deepening each of those individual relationships that I have with each of them, rather than it being about my tie to that house being my partner. That makes sense.
Makes sense to me. Let's see. Is it better to avoid the things that increase worry? I've stopped checking the COVID metrics to avoid the building stress in relation to it.
There's not a single right or wrong answer here. I think that we all need to draw our own boundaries about how much of that kind of information we're able to digest in a way that still feels healthy for us. I think that in general, completely turning off news and not paying attention to what's happening in the world is unhelpful. And spending all of your time obsessing over every last piece and article about it is also unhelpful. So each of us is going to have a different position on that spectrum, from absolutely no news to absolutely all the news that is going to be right for us. What I would pay attention to is how you're feeling as you're consuming it. Notice how your body is reacting. Are your muscles getting more tense? Are your shoulders coming up? Are you noticing a change in your breathing? Are you noticing your thoughts are racing, or you're having more trouble focusing? Are you noticing that it feels like you can't stop looking at things? These are all signs that you've gone past that point for yourself. So find ways to moderate the amount of information that you're consuming in a way that fits right for you. And it's going to probably take some like trial and error to find where that is. You're probably going to go too far to each direction a little bit before you find that right balance for yourself.
How do you manage the anxiety that comes with not knowing when this will all be over and when you'll get to see your partner again? I'm really struggling with that currently.
I think that the first answer I would give is just feel that pain and fear. Give yourself the space to feel that hardness. From that point, different people need different things. For some folks, it is easier to operate from an assumption that it's going to be like 18 to 24 months, and if it's earlier, great. For some people, it's easier to operate from an assumption that it's coming soon. So some people need to assume the worst so that they have space to be pleasantly surprised rather than let down. Some people, if they focus on the worst, it'll only get worse for them. So they need the space that is focused more on hope or on possibility. I would say talk about it a lot. Talk about it a lot. Part of trauma, part of dealing with these large communal traumas is that sometimes we have to tell the same stories a lot of different times as a part of our processing. So talk about it. Talk about it with lots of different people. Even if you feel like you're a broken record, even if you feel like that story isn't changing or it's not going anywhere, the act of telling it and giving yourself space to tell it is essential to being able to process those feelings and be able to move through them. And like right now, we're still in the midst of the hardest parts of this. We're all still adjusting to the loss of the life we used to find normal and figuring out what this new kind of normal even looks like. So again, just give yourself space. It's really hard. It's not that you need to feel bad right now, but if it's hard, it's hard, and that's valid. Find what things you can anchor onto that are going to help you out. If it's anchoring onto, we're going to set a 24 months from now date that is an absolutely unchangeable date for both of us, because by then, God has helped us all if they haven't figured out something for us to leave our houses. So 2 years from now, we're definitely going to see each other. We're going to put it in the calendar right now and start planning it. Maybe for you, it's we find a weekly day to spend a lot of time together, even if it's virtually. Maybe for you, it looks a ton of different ways. But find out what can you anchor to give you some kind of hope or enjoyment right now. And do you need to focus on the worst case so you can be pleasantly surprised? Do you need to focus on hope and possibility so you're not overwhelmed with the worst case? Find that balance for you.
Okay, question. I was actively looking for a monogamous kink relationship. Oh, wait. That I don't know how that one got in there again. Okay, not feeling very kinky right now. How to explain that to a partner?
So some of us, when stuff is really stressful and hard, have an increase in desire for sex or kink or whatever. Some people, when stuff is really hard, it tanks their desire. If you haven't read the book Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski, she does a really great job of explaining this in terms of the sexual excitatory system and sexual inhibitory system. So like your gas pedal and your brake. Some of us have very sensitive gas pedals. Some of us have sensitive brake pedals. Some of us are sensitive in different ways in different situations. I think understanding that it is totally normal to not feel kinky right now and that that is perfectly okay is important for you personally to accept. And then to just tell your partner, like, look, I really love you. I love doing kink things with you. Right now, my brakes are on super hard. So I'm willing to talk about things that might help lift those brakes. And I might just need a lot more like caring kind of interactions and less of the kink stuff for right now. Or I might need more space to just have my feelings. Here, I'll put it in the chat. Come as you are. And just, you know, again, what you're experiencing is totally normal. It is totally normal for you to be having less of a desire right now for certain kinds of things. There is nothing wrong with you, and that is okay.
Regarding virtual tools, I find they sometimes can cause more feelings of disconnection than connection, or exacerbate relationship problems compared to in-person or just not interacting when long distance. Do I just need to keep working on figuring out which tools or long distance relationship activities reduce that feeling of disconnect, trial and error? Or are there any guiding principles that have already been identified?
So different people respond to different things differently. In general, I think text messages and emails are the most likely to exacerbate problems because it's impossible to read tone. it's easy to fire off a reply when you're feeling activated that isn't necessarily you being your best self. Things that are the least likely to cause problems are like real-time video chat and through the mail handwritten letters for kind of opposite reasons, right? In real-time video chat, we get to see them. It reminds us of who they are and why we care about them. And it helps us kind of remember what's important about working this together. And handwritten letters, because there's a lag, it's really hard to get into a super accelerated conflict with someone over them. Plus, like when we're handwriting a letter, we tend to want to put like nice things and sweet things. And there's an effort in like going to mail them or getting the stamps. And it can feel very, especially for people who like words of affirmation or acts of service or gifts, it can very much feed into those languages. Even for people with touch, having that physical object that they put their hand to physically can be very helpful. So experiment with it. And like if you find that there just aren't not in-person ways that you feel like help you feel connected, that can be valid too. For you, this may be a time where you ask your partners for some spaciousness to just like put things on pause for a while so that things don't get worse. That is also valid to ask for. You may have to have a conversation with them about what that looks like or when you check back in about getting back into these kinds of things, but do what you need to do to take care of yourself.
Okay, so somebody had asked, what about online dating where the other person still wants to meet?
So one of the things that I'm working on for my personal growth is finding ways to move out of spaces of judgment of what other people are saying and doing. Right now, I don't know of almost anywhere in the world where it would be advisable to meet up with a new person from online dating in person. And each of us gets to make our own risk management decisions, at least insofar as it affects us directly. So if you live in your own house alone, you don't interact very often with other people, and you want to go meet up with another person from online dating in person, depending on where and how you do it, the only risks you might be incurring are for you and that other person. And that means that is a risk management decision that each of you can make based on your own levels of risk tolerance. Personally, for me, I wouldn't do it right now. Because for me, someone asking during this time to meet up in person is telling me something about them that indicates to me that they are unlikely to be a good partner for me. Because for me, I really value partners who understand risk and understand the way that they are moving through this world as an interconnected system, not as something that is limited to individuals. And so someone who wants to meet up in person, given all of the recommendations against these kinds of things, would indicate to me someone who is less likely to have those kinds of values on interconnection and keeping other people safe. So it's up to you. If you feel like there is a way that you can make that decision that feels good for you, then do it. If you don't feel like that's something that you can do that feels good for you, you can tell them that. You can say like, you know, I'm not really in a place where I want to meet up with other people in person right now, at least for so long as these kinds of issues are in place. If that's really important to you to be able to meet up with someone in person, like right now, then I'm probably not the right person for you. And just like bring that abundance mindset to this process. There are so many people to date. You can say no a ton. The part of the goal of dating, especially early dating or dating on apps, is to find people to say no to. Because you need to rule those people out so that you can find the people who are your yeses.
Find your yeses and then guard them with your life.
Yes.
And so we're going to end this chat on...
Okay, there was a couple more questions.
Go ahead. Did they get in before?
Yes. I have my green highlighter out. You know, and these are these are above the bottom green highlight. So, yeah.
Okay, go for it.
Now I did step away for 2 minutes, so stop me if you did hear this one before, like about 10 minutes ago. But this one I think was from little baby Rachel. Do you have anything specific to DDLG is daddy dom little girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
to DDLG with task and punishment reminders for praise and punishment in the dynamic.
I think that was related to apps and tools.
Oh, okay.
And I think stuff like Asana and Trello might be really good for that, for like the, because essentially what you're doing is like project management in those kinds of situations. You could also use like Google Spreadsheets. Google Sheets is really, really nice, and everybody can update it from wherever they are. So you can put in a homework assignment, when it's due, and then like what kind of thing you need. And that'll give you that kind of information. Asana is kind of nice because when you check off tasks, every so often it has like a unicorn fly across your screen. So like that's really cool. There are also chore apps where you can earn stickers. So like, especially with DDLG dynamics, you can look into apps that are designed for families to monitor things like homework and chores. And that'll help with like their littleness getting stickers and those kinds of reinforcement that littles like me tend to enjoy.
All right. I think I have one more question in this pile. What advice do you have for those of us who live alone when touch is our number one love language?
We talked about that one.
Oh, we did? Okay, sorry. That was where I stepped away for 2 minutes.
I'll add one more thing to that, which is like experiment with different kinds of sensations. So like sometimes when I'm having a rough day, what I need is like the really soft cuddle blanket. And sometimes when I'm having a really rough day, what I need is to like ram my hips into the counter and like bang against a wall and just kind of like throw myself around and get those more intense sensations. So just like play around a lot. Treat your house like a bounce house. Stay away from breakables, obviously, but like just experiment. What different kinds of sensations or experiences work well for you to feel like you're getting some kind of touch or interaction?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, that covers the questions.
The interaction.
I have one more because I kind of teased this in chat, Nookie, so I want to promote this. As an interactive game, for those of you who have a not safe for work Twitter account and enjoy music, we are doing a fun interactive thing on Nookie's Twitter account where we have basically like a 30-day like calendar of various like topics of for like music. So what's your favorite driving song, or what's your favorite song about what reminds you of your childhood, you know, some of the
today it was
proposing
a song
that every day
drugs or alcohol.
Yeah, like so what's your favorite song about drugs or alcohol? So if you go to that tweet, that's the one that was today's, but we're posting one every day and we're getting lots of like great like interaction. So you'll get to mingle with fellow kinksters, you know, that and if you post one, you get tagged for all the other ones. So, you know, if you enjoy the notification, you get to hear all kinds of music. Dr. Liz, you're also invited if you want
to. I'll post this up on Twitter too, but my favorite song featuring drugs or alcohol has to be One More Drink by Ludacris, because that song is hilarious. It is so funny. Ludacris was consistently underrated as a rapper. And like,
I completely agree.
I love this take. You know, yeah. But Dr. Liz, I'll basically, anybody who participates gets tagged in like the next day. So I'm just gonna give you the bye as far as this awesome presentation. Like, you know, without participating, you're in. You know, so
I'm gonna put it up right now. I'm gonna find that link on YouTube and reply to the tweet.
Yep.
But it's funny because I saw that this morning after he posted it, and the first one I put up was that song from Hair.
Hair. Yeah, yeah. Don't keep it musical.
LBJ took the IRT down to Force Feed USA.
Polarizing.
Everybody on LSD, and I was like, "Yes, I know drug songs."
Who was your other one? You put a Tom Waits one up there too, right?
Tom Waits, the piano has been.
Tom Waits knows his way around a bottle. Yeah, which is
that is so very true. I love that man.
Just gonna wait here. This is amazing.
Look, little baby Rachel knows it. When he got there, what did he see? The youth of America on LSD. Yep. So it is 9:39. I am hitting my wall because this is way past my bedtime, y'all. I'm an early to bed, early to rise type of person, which I know is not a popular stance when it comes to kinkiness. but there is one more question for Dr. Liz that got in before that cutoff. And
I'm going to ask it, and then I'm also going to hopefully answer it. And the question is, what talk are you doing next, Dr. Liz?
What talk and are we doing next?
The next talk that we're doing with Dr. Liz is soon.
Yeah.
There you've got your answer.
We will make this work. This was super fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to, we haven't decided what the next Dr. Liz Sugarbit is going to be, but we know the promo is going to be backed by popular demand. I've already written that headline, in tomorrow's newspaper.
So. Wait. If we can tie it into some music, it could be Baby Got Back by popular demand.
Yes. And I do have a very luscious booty. I'm just saying, Baby Got Back is an appropriate promo song for me.
Well, I think you and I are like soul twins, because for the longest time I've thought that my autobiography should be me and my big butt, how we learned to live together.
So super fair. Super fair.
You and me and the butt makes three tonight,
I was a figure skater growing up. If you've been a figure skater, you just have ass forever. It's just
rollerblades and figure skating. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Definitely. Just it separated by a continent here. Yeah. Okay. Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for what, Ryan?
I know. I'm going into my wind down. This is the rapid fire where I get all of the, any additional promos. And so this is check that for our upcoming schedule. And the next event is Friday when
Femdom Friday.
We have the premiere of Femdom Friday with D20.
D20 Dom. So excited about that. She is a hoot. Oh my goodness. Y'all are going to love her if you come. She is freaking funny. And we're going to be talking about training, which is one of my favorite things. I love behavior modification. So we're going to start with
money. Prodoms don't qualify for the loan, even though the work that they're doing is legal. So,
oh my gosh.
Prodoms money.
And that's also this one's going to be one of those recurring series. So this is going to be every, was it second Friday? Yeah, second Friday
first
of the
Friday.
Month. First Friday. First Friday of the month. Wait a minute.
Second Friday.
Yeah.
Second Friday.
That's the 10th. Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
Every second Friday of the month. So yeah, the premiere on April 10th.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So you can keep putting links in the chat, Ryan, but I am going to wind this down.
I'm done taking the floor.
Okay. Thank you all for joining us. Take two. Thank you for choosing to spend your time with us, your hour and 42 minutes and then some. Thank you so much, Dr. Liz. It was a real joy to have you. You are a wonderful speaker and presenter, and I believe from what I saw in the chat and from what I was reacting to that you really put some important concepts together for people who are struggling through this or who know people who are struggling through this. So all of you who are here, do make sure that you go follow Dr. Liz, that you buy her book. Remember, she spent this time here, on her dime. So make sure that you go and support her, support Dating Kinky, put your money where you can. If you can't, then shout out, tell everybody how amazing Dr. Liz was and how they can find her. Shout out Dating Kinky, say what a wonderful time you had. And if you tag me on a writing on FetLife or wherever you do the things, if you shout me out and let me know where it is, anything related to this particular topic, I will give it a boost and make sure that it gets up on the replay page as well. So if you want to write about, what you learned or what you, brought out in this or whatever, absolutely do that. Again, thank you, Dr. Liz. You have been a real joy.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad we made this work.